Translation. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayan or Krishna. Such devotees, who are fully peaceful, are extremely rare. We have a purport which extends over 3.5 pages. And if you read all that in one breath, then by the time you get to the end, you forget the beginning. So that won't work. However, if I start doing it piece by piece, then I'm never going to finish it. So what to do? You can't win. But that's what I'm going to do. So it may be a half-finished purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives the following purport to this verse. Simply desiring mukti or liberation is insufficient. One must become factually liberated. When one understands the futility of the materialistic way of life, one becomes advanced in knowledge, and therefore he situates himself in the vanaprastha order, unattached to family, wife, and children. One should then further progress to the platform of sannyas, the actual renounced order, never to fall again and be afflicted by materialistic life. Even though one desires to be liberated, this does not mean that he is liberated. Only rarely is someone liberated. Indeed, although many men take sannyas to become liberated, because of their imperfections, they again become attached to women, material activities, social welfare work, and so on. I'll do it paragraph by paragraph. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Girandana Salakya Shakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sikaro Siyutupadakamalam Sikarum Vaishnavamscha Sirupam Sagrajatam Sahaganaraganetan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakam Vitamsta Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. The material world is a dangerous place because the illusory energy which makes up this material world is very powerful. And it is said in the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Muyanti yat suryaha, even the devas become bewildered. Tejo varibadam yata vinimayo yata trisargam risa. And then it begins to continue to describe the illusory energy and how sometimes we may see water on land. It is describing how a deer could run off into the desert seeing such illusory water, and or we're seeing water in fire. And thus, all living beings in this material world are prone to become illusioned. Bhagavad Gita states, Icha dvesa samutena dvandumahena bharataha sarva bhutani samahan sargayanti parantapa. It describes that all living beings are born into delusion. So, from the very beginning, we are already covered, so to speak. We are born into delusion, and therefore, and everyone is in illusion. So when there is common madness, then madness becomes normal. It becomes the standard. And that is really what we're facing in the world, common madness. So material life, therefore, is not at all a normal situation. It is fundamentally an abnormal situation. We don't belong here, and we simply cannot spend our time trying to make it more and more comfortable. Of course, comfort is
is required to keep body and soul together. Sometimes we speak about the comfort circle, the stretching circle, and the pain circle, and where to be. If one is too long in the comfort circle, what is the result? One becomes soft and weak, and gradually has no more strength to deal, to fight. One's willpower becomes diminished, and one's capacity to perform austerity becomes less day by day. Thus, some stretching circle is recommended, where we push ourselves to some extent, taking on some voluntary difficulties. Stretching circle. Then life itself creates situations where at times we have to enter into the pain circle. Right? Just somehow or other deal with it and just plow through it all and just survive. But if we voluntarily take the stretching so far that we go into the pain circle too much, then afterwards you wind up in the comfort circle in a hospital bed. What can be said? Right? So there is a requirement to balance these, and balance is something that is not fixed. It said in spiritual life, balance is something like riding a bicycle. There is no such thing. Now the bicycle is balanced. It is a constant thing. I'm from Holland. We know all about bicycles. And balancing bicycles is an ongoing process. So it's balance in motion. And that is really how balance is found in spiritual life. We always need to again look for the balance, and after a while we find, now I was for quite some time in the stretching circle, or maybe even the pain one, so a little comfort would be welcome. Like today is Monday morning, and as far as I'm concerned, Monday is after Hiroshima, and it's Tuesday, my God. It's getting serious. You can see that. No, I think that I missed my Monday. Monday just turned into it was an extended weekend, and I think in reality it's Monday. My God, it's Tuesday. What happened to Monday? So you can see, it was an extended weekend, very nice, but it will also be appreciated if there are times for comfort. So we are not, there may have been a time in the history of our movement when the renounced order was taken in a spirit of austerity. Let's embrace the austerity. I think now that we are getting older, the approach also changes, because with age one can handle less austerity. It's just not, it doesn't work in the same way, and there's really a need for some peace, some comfort, some support even. That is a requirement, and thus we can no longer just take to the renounced order of life on the strength of determination and spit on the material energy and now go forward and leave it all behind. But still, the renounced ashrams, such as Vanaprastha and Sannyas, are a great opportunity. Let us begin with discussing the Vanaprastha ashram. It is a great opportunity to deal with the great risk of somehow or other remaining entangled in the material energy and being forced to take another birth. It is an option. It is a possibility. And I don't know what all of you think about that, but personally, I say, it's all right. I'll give it a miss. That's okay. No thanks, if possible. If I could somehow or other avoid another birth, I would be very happy. And for that purpose, I think vanaprastha becomes something to consider. Because after all, if at the time of death we are still so deeply attached to family bondage, it will be hard. It will be hard to remember Krishna. And then, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam charati antakalevaram, whatever we remember may carry us to a next birth. So thus, the vanaprastha order is not a luxury. Some years ago, I was on the first social development conference in ISKCON, which was held in Mayapur, and they had representatives of the different ashrams speak. There was a brahmachari who spoke and who said that he had a hard time facing people who were constantly saying, the statistics are against you. You have no chance. Or grihasthas who were saying they were tired of being looked upon like second-class citizens, fallen, and really like not really there, but sort of tolerated as devotees. Ladies were speaking about chanting many rounds in cold and drafty corridors, and everyone was like pouring his heart out. Then a vanaprastha came up to the microphone and said, I have an identity crisis because I don't exist. Which I still remember today. I thought that was good. That was interesting. It is a fact. We don't have much of a vanaprastha order. What do you do? Go into a forest, eat roots? I mean, I wouldn't know what roots to eat. Don't ask me. Can you eat anything in the forest? Roots? What kind of roots? Yeah. I have no idea. No idea. Nettles, that's about all I know. Let's get limited after a while. Nettles and nettles and nettles. So it may be hard to live in the forest. Live in Vrindavan, that's also hard, right? For so many reasons. For material reasons, spiritual reasons. Not everyone can live in Vrindavan. It doesn't always make sense. Then what? Right. Then what do we do? So how to give shape to vanaprastha is a big challenge. How to fill it in? At least, Srila Prabhupada said, panchachodam vanam bhajet, at the age of 50, after 50, no more sex life. He said that husband and wife can stay together, but at least no more sex life, and they should simplify. I'm thinking, my analysis of the situation is that in the grihastha ashram, we are working especially for this life. But in the vanaprastha ashram, our concern becomes the next. I think that's where the shift is. Although externally there may not be immediately such a change, but the focus becomes the next life. And now what to do? Now prepare for the next life. Grihastha means we got to get established, we got to get a house, we got to put the children to school, we got to somehow or other do so many things and enjoy a little on the within limits and whatnot, right? Satisfy our desires a bit. So many things to do, very busy. I had this cartoon which showed a baby and the caption under it said, too young. Next caption, a couple in love, full moon behind their joined heads saying, too much in love. Next picture showed a family, both husband and wife had six arms and they were full. He had a Black & Decker computer, a phone and a briefcase, and she had three children, shopping bags and whatnot, right? Too busy. Next picture showed an old man, deaf like anything, too old. Last picture, the cross on the grave too late. So, what to do? What to do? I found that cartoon somewhere years ago, and it stayed with me. It was more than a cartoon. It was me, you know. It was warning. It was a warning, and it was telling me, "Watch out! Don't forget this." I kept the cartoon. It still sort of keep it alive. I repeat it in lectures every so many. Well, a few times a year, just to remind myself, you know, don't forget this cartoon. It's useful. So, in this mood, we are approaching Vanaprastha now as a shelter, not as simply as a shelter from the cycle of birth and death. Sannyas is another story altogether. Sannyas is, well, what shall I say? Let me begin with Lord Chaitanya. Is described in the Chaitanya Mangal what happened when Lord Chaitanya was about to take sannyas. There was no, although at one point Lord Chaitanya got up in the middle of the night and left home, he had discussed it before with Mother Sachi. And in that discussion, he gave different arguments, and of course she didn't buy into it at all. But one particular argument that he gave was interesting to me. And he said that most sons, they leave home and go out into the world to gain wealth and bring that back to their parents. I mean, in India, of course. He said, so I want to go and leave home and bring the wealth of Prem and bring that back to my family members. So I thought that was really a nice description of what sannyas is really all about. Right? Go and leave home and go and try to find Krishna Prem. So it is particularly for that on a personal level. The Chaitanya Charitamrita gives the other reason for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas, namely preaching. Krishna is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Suridam Sarvadehinam, the well-wisher of all living beings. A sannyasi is meant to embrace that spirit. Prabhupada explained, one gives up his family in order to embrace the entire world as his family. Why stop at a certain family and say, yes, these are in and those are out, right? On this side of the picket fence, you're okay. And the other side, excuse me, we don't speak with strangers. We have our privacy walls. Like this, sometimes householders, not talking devotee householders, so don't get upset. Sometimes householders are described in the Bhagavatam as envious. The envious householders. Envious because of the picket fences. Envious because of the limited capacity to give love. Whereas sannyas is the ashram where one has to learn, and it's a long learning process, to be non-envious and be lovingly disposed towards all living beings, irregardless of their state of consciousness. Even if they are envious, still one should not respond in an envious way. One may have some defense mechanisms in place to save one's life, but mercy is to go out to all, irregardless. So it is a great challenge, a great ashram, the sannyas ashram, in that sense, a great opportunity to go forward in self-development, and because the focus is so strong. Nothing is allowed, not very much. One is not... a grihastha can sort of walk into the supermarket, read the ingredients and say, it's okay, it's bona fide. Right? I'm talking about the ice cream, of course. But as a sannyasi, you can't really do that. Yeah. Of course, you can do it another way. You can go to the house of the Grihasthas and get yourself invited and eat like huge quantities of ice cream. And then it's like your kind mercy for honoring the Prasadam. So there are ways, there are perks everywhere. But still, it's limited. It's limited. If I would appear in the manor in blue jeans tomorrow morning, everyone would start looking like, what's happening? Whereas if anyone else would do it, wouldn't be a big deal. So it is narrow. One makes his life quite narrow as a sannyasi, if you look at it. It doesn't really offer much much leeway. A little, you can stretch the envelope like everyone else, but the envelope is definitely a few sizes smaller than the envelope in other ashrams, right? If you know what I mean. So one has to go deep. It forces one to go deep. And in that sense, it's a nice ashram, I must say. I've tried all four, personally, and I must say, this one is pretty good compared to the other ones, to be honest. Huh? I tried them extensively. Okay, well, I did only the first paragraph so far. That's what happens with these long purports. I'll go to the second paragraph. Jnanis, yogis, and karmis, devoid of devotional service, are called offenders. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mayavadi Krishna Aparadi, one who thinks that everything is Maya, instead of thinking that everything is Krishna, is called an aparadi, or offender. So I like this because it shows the mood of the impersonalist renunciant and the devotee renunciant. The impersonalist renunciant is hard and is simply seeing it's all Maya, it's all illusion. Whereas in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, there is a reference where it says that a devotee sees the beauty in this world as the smile of Krishna. And I really like that quote. I think it's a beautiful quote because it gives us a path in this world to discover Krishna in the material world and to, at the same time, be soft-hearted. So in this way, gradually the heart of the Vaishnava becomes soft, and thus he becomes gentle and sensitive to the suffering that is there in this world, to the predicament that various living beings are in. And gradually he can develop compassion. Compassion is, of course, can only be truly developed if one experiences a better way of life. If we are experiencing that Krishna consciousness is actually really wonderful, then we can be compassionate. But if we are suffering like hell in our spiritual life, how can we feel compassion? Rather, then we look at the materialist and think that we start feeling sorry for ourselves. Right? I'm living with all these vows, and they are like, you know, and it's summertime, and they're doing fine, and we are sitting here, you know, with so many unfinished rounds. That, I'm talking about the ones from last week, you know. What to do? So, soft-heartedness is required. Then we also become sensitive to the mercy of Krishna. We begin to see how Krishna is unlimitedly merciful. So, Srila Prabhupada called those who think that everything is Maya instead of thinking that everything is Krishna, they are aparadis, or offenders. Continue reading. Although the Mayavadis, impersonalists, are offenders at the lotus feet of Krishna, they may nonetheless be counted among the siddhas, those who have realized the self. They may be considered nearer to spiritual perfection because at least they've realized what spiritual life is. If such a person becomes Narayana Parayana, a devotee of Lord Narayan, he's better than a Jivan Mukta, one who is liberated or perfect. This requires higher intelligence. Everyone needs an outlet, you know, somewhere, and in the Hare Krishna movement, the outlet is the Mayavadis. If you want to sort of, if you want to have a go at someone, there they are, the Mayavadis. There's nothing as great as bashing someone, and Mayavadis are perfect for that. It is said, Bhakta Vesa Krodha Jana, Narottam Das Thakur said it, that if you have any sense of envy, of dvesh, then direct it towards these personalities, these non-devotees, the Mayavadis. So it's authorized. Mayavadi bashing, one of the Vaishnava sports. Here we are giving credit to the impersonalists. We're giving actually credit because they are understanding something very deep. They're understanding the nature of eternity, and that the essence is eternity and not the temporary world. That is very rare, very rare. Everyone makes too much out of the temporary reality, takes it too serious. They know. So in that way, they are siddhas, those who are actually, they have realized the self. But we know. Patantyana drita yusmadangrahaya. There, even if they would attain perfection and exit from this material domain and remain in the Brahma Jyoti, patantyana drita yusmadangrahaya, they would come down again to the material realm. Therefore, in the discussion between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was quoting the verse Tatenu Kampam Susamiksamano Bunjane Vatmakritam Vipakam Ritvakpapurbi Yovidadan Namaste Yo Muktipade Sadoyabak. He said, Yo Bhaktipade Sadoyabak. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately said, what is this? What are you quoting here? What is this? You're changing the scriptures. Right? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, I don't like this verse. I just don't like this verse, yo mukti pade sadaya bak, right? Mukti. Mukti can never, liberation can never be complete without bhakti. What is the use of liberation? Bhakti is the essence. Therefore, I've changed it to yo bhakti pade sadaya bak, and I think it is correct. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised him again. And gave an explanation and said, no, you have not understood the nature of mukti. Because true mukti, true liberation, is only attained by the Vaishnava. It is only attained through bhakti. Because that is the only liberation that is eternal. It is the only platform of liberation which once attained is never lost. The liberation attained by the impersonalist is once again lost, like water scooped up in the hands and runs away through the cracks between our fingers. It cannot be kept. But mukti actually means bhakti, because only on bhakti, on the platform of bhakti, is real liberation. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya argued back. Well, I still don't like it because it's confusing. I still think bhakti pade is better. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased to see how that root of Mayavad that was so deep within the heart of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had now been removed. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, Tarka Shastra Jadi Ami Amar Lo Hapinda. He said that this tarka, this logic, this logic of neti neti, not this, not this, It has simply made my heart, it has made my intelligence dull. So I always like that verse, and that's why I memorize it, because people are sitting all day doing Sudoku puzzles and whatnot, you know, trying to sharpen the brain through logic. That's a big thing. You know, logic is sort of equated with sharp, right? Sharp, like Richard Dawkins, you know, or logic and sharp, right? God delusion. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is saying, no, it made me dull. So how did it make him dull? It made him dull because with each argument that reconfirms the impersonal conception of life, a person becomes less and less sensitive to the concept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Each time his heart is hardening, and less can the concept, the consideration that it might even be possible, theoretically, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, less and less can that enter the heart, until there is absolutely not, like, no entrance left even for the possibility that there is a personality of Godhead. Ridiculous, right? Absolutely. Doesn't make sense. There are thousands, hundreds of thousands, arguments against it. And in this way, the heart is hardened through so much false logic, and the result is that one becomes so dull that one can no longer appreciate the beauty of the deities, the beauty of Krishna, the mercy of Krishna, and so on. Therefore, Mayavadi Basya Sunle Hoye Sarvanasa. If one hears the Mayavadi commentary or arguments, everything will be lost. Because little by little, all these Mayavadi arguments are systematically reconfirming the fact there is no personality of Godhead called Krishna. It's all illusion. There is no spiritual world. There is no devotional service. It is all just sentimental illusion. Yes, and yes, you are working so hard, scrubbing Krishna's floor. It's all illusion. You're doing it all for nothing. That is their view, which is a miserable view. It is a miserly view. It is a dry view. There is no ras, no juice. That is the reason why the Mayavadis fall back down. There is no ras. But Krishna is known as Akila Rasamrita Murti. He is the, as Srila Prabhupada translated it in that original pamphlet, the reservoir of all pleasure. That is Krishna. And thus, we are happy to leave the Mayavadis on their own dry, miserable little island and wish them well. Mayavadis or Buddhists or so on. I remember reading the biography of Milarepa, who was like a famous personality in Tibetan Buddhism. And I remember that Milarepa lived for 40 years on grass soup. And the result? He turned green. That sort of, those were the arguments that saved me from Buddhism, I must say. Grass soup. That wasn't very convincing. So how beautiful is this wonderful philosophy where there is a concept of Krishna Prasadam, right? Where is a concept of Krishna's mercy. And once I did a study on mercy, and I looked at the words for mercy, and I saw daya, and I saw kripa, and I saw that the word daya was generally used for mercy that is distributed to all. Kripa is oftentimes used, not always, but oftentimes used for the personal one-on-one exchange of mercy. And then, of course, also the word anukampan is there, of mercy. But in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I found that the word for mercy that was used is generally prasad. Right? That at one stage one begins to see everything as prasad. So the liberated devotees that are described in the 10th canto, those liberated devotees see everything as prasad. Everything is Krishna prasad. What a wonderful concept to everywhere see the mercy of Krishna. And this is Vaishnavism instead of just living with Maya and day by day reinforcing it with logic and austerity. We reject this Maya. So I'm glad that I didn't go that route and instead wound up in this movement. I think we are fortunate. Let me finish at least the paragraph. Reading again, although the Mayavadis, impersonalists, are offenders at the lotus feet of Krishna, they may nonetheless be counted amongst the siddhas, those who have realized the self. They may be considered nearer to spiritual perfection because at least they've realized what spiritual life is. If such a person becomes Narayan Parayana, a devotee of Lord Narayan, he's better than a Jiva Mukta, one who is liberated or perfect. This requires higher intelligence. I'm ending here after two paragraphs. Thank you. Any questions or comments?